Hello again. We're back. We've watched more Young Pope and we have thoughts for you about episodes.
Why are you making me do this?
Hey, this is what they voted for. I already put it out there that this show was not good.
It's so bad. It's torture. You're giving me psychic damage.
Oh, and guess what? Guess what? The New Pope, which is like season 2 with John Malkovich, starts airing in January. Get ready. I think it's going to be better though, because I mean, I don't think it's possible to write two popes that are as obnoxious in a row.
That's fair. You don't see my snaps anymore, but like I put a snap on my story today that was like, whoever wrote this needs to be fired immediately.
Paolo Sorrentino? Oh dear, yeah. So we're here with episodes 3 and 4. So let's jump into our anchor feels about it. So episode 3, it starts with Pope Pius discussing the conclave and how it went for him on this side. Like he's just talking about his self-serving and non-traditional values. You know, they chose a pope they didn't know. I love myself more than God. I only believe in myself. And it's all very protracted and contrite. And it's probably, when I look back and think about it, it's probably a representation of how people actually feel, that the Pope might feel. I think it's probably an echo of how popular opinion might be about someone like the Pope, especially if we look back in the papacies of Benedict XVI, who was extremely self-aggrandizing and definitely about all of that luxury and whatnot. So,
but also, isn't it kind of like more like America's view on the papacy?
Well, exactly. Exactly. I think that that's what we're seeing represented there, is this idea that most people who look at the Pope in the popular imagination are seeing a very self-serving, very indulgent sort of thing. I mean, maybe less now because we're dealing with Francis, but yeah, I think a lot of people do feel that way. So, and then by comparison, we have Spencer and Foiello talking about the conclave, and they start saying things like, the Holy Spirit breathed, and it's... I'm just so tired already of all these people giving him way too much credit.
The Holy Spirit, or...?
Or just this whole, that the Pope is a saint, the Pope performs miracles, the Holy Spirit got him elected. It's like, clearly not. And then the next scene is the Pope penitentially praying, retracting everything that he'd said, right? Like, oh, I don't believe in myself more than you, God. I'm so sorry for saying all those things. Like, what are you trying to do? Like, who is he trying to portray? And why? Why is he putting himself out as this incredibly self-aggrandizing person if he doesn't believe that? And we know that he's so desperate to hear the voice of God. And this is a prevailing theme that we continue to see throughout the series with the crisis of faith and asking people about their vocations. He's desperate to hear the voice of God. And yet I'm sitting there and going, if you are being so awful, why would that happen?
Yeah.
So then, you know, they're all trying to get over his homily, the homily that he gave to the world. And
yeah, they're telling people to resign over it.
At one point, they say it's been 400 years since a pope took such a hostile stance towards the faithful. And that's really going to be something that we see have consequences as the show goes on, is how Pius treats the faithful and what that looks like for the church.
Who are they saying is super hostile originally 400 years? Who's 400 years ago?
Well, that would have been right in that period that we would be looking at the Protestant Reformation, basically.
Oh,
so
okay.
We definitely will be coming into a very, very, very fire and brimstone Catholicism by that point. So, yeah, it's not a great place for the church to be, especially in the 21st century. And then they start talking about the Kurtwell case. This is something that takes a long time to actually manifest in the show. So it's, this is a case of sex abuse scandal. And they are using the Kurtwell case in the show as a microcosm to kind of represent the sex scandal that's going on in the church that is still currently to this day being tackled.
It's existed forever.
Exactly. And this is why they talk about, like, Kurtwell's seminary providing 40% of all new priests and a bunch of income that the church relies on, because that is what we're seeing with this whole sex abuse scandal and sex abuse cover-up, is they're determining that a lot of these people who were in positions of power and who were abusing children and nuns and whatnot were people who had extraordinary financial power and extraordinary political power. So we see Pius very much avoiding the topic. And we'll get there in a little bit, but whenever he discusses this particular issue, he also conflates it with that issue of homosexuality, which is infuriating.
Which kind of confused me. I was like, is that the dude that is in charge of getting priests because you were mad at him? And it was just, a little bit confusing in that it didn't seem like the two were separated.
It takes a lot. They just kind of use it as a motif. Like, I'm on episode 7. And they've currently not brought that to the forefront. I know that it does at some point, having seen the show several years ago, but it is one of those things that just is underlying motif. You're not supposed to think about it too hard at this point.
Except he totally yelled at that gay man. And then now there's like a thing that he's like, it's because of gay men.
That's totally something we're definitely going to discuss. I think episode 4 is really heavy for that, so we'll definitely have more to talk about on that idea, because it becomes a very strong theme as it goes on. And then we have him talking about not giving interviews, not giving press conferences and whatnot, because Pius very much wants the church to turn inward, away from the world. He also cuts the one cardinal's positions who is responsible for organizing all the travel, because he says he's not going to be wasting time roaming around the world. And so he sends that poor cardinal to Alaska, which was pretty awful.
Yeah, to Alaska.
This is the second person he sent to Alaska.
Yeah, Alaska's going to have too many priests at a certain point here. It's not like there's a lot of stuff in Alaska.
Yeah, it's just a way of getting rid of people and punishing people that he feels should be punished. But it is an interesting contradiction, right? Because we have him saying, oh, I won't be wasting time roaming around the world. So he's trying to represent some level of, quote unquote, humility, or like cutting down the excesses of the church.
The chaff, yeah.
But it's in direct contradiction to his wanting all of the gifts. And so it's just another point of this incredibly contradictory, contrarian character who drives me nuts. And then we have Sister Mary at a press conference where she's reading a statement provided by Pius about his total indifference to the doubts and criticism of the world.
And then so she reads the thing, and then they're like trying to ask her questions, and she's like, nope, and stands up, and they're like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah, they're definitely really concerned about who Sister Mary is. And rightfully so, if this new figure started to represent this church as the church is taking a massive step in the opposite direction, you would definitely be like, who are you? So, I don't know.
She's just like, I'm Sister Mary. And then she leaves and they're like, who the fuck is Sister Mary?
Exactly. Who's Sister Mary? They're very concerned. And of course, we know that the world is always concerned when there's a woman in a position of authority like that, especially in the church. So again, commentary on femaleness in the church. There's a lot of talk about Lenny having a plan, Pius having a plan, but, and this is something I wrote at this point as he was meeting with Spencer, is he's really just projecting his suffering on everyone else. And then Spencer says something like, you want to make the world pay for what your parents did to you? And I'm like, yep, okay, clearly Spencer and I are on the same page about this. Because that drove me nuts. And then he meets Esther.
Yes, she's standing, she's looking like a creep. And he's like, bring that creep in my house.
Yeah, and this is when we see the first sort of foreshadowing of things, because he has a collapse.
Oh, yeah. But it was, like, in that weird shape, I forget which Mary. It's either Mother Mary or it's Mary Magdalene. It's probably Mother Mary. And it's the whole, like, Jesus collapsed on his mom?
The Pietà?
Painting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely has that symbolism about it, but no further explanation is given. No one even comments on it. He just kind of collapses into her and...
Yeah, then they don't mention... He has a weird dream about his parents while he's in his, I don't know, coma or whatever. But like, no one is like, oh, for whatever reason, the Pope just collapsed. Like, no one's concerned.
No one's concerned. And there is no commentary on it. We will see that as an idea come back, because I don't know if at this point there has been a scene where he's bleeding out of his nose. But there are occasional scenes where he'll be thinking, especially whenever he's thinking about his parents, he'll start bleeding out of his nose. I haven't made a note of it so far, but it does definitely come up, and that will be a motif. So the first collapse, and then nosebleeds. This is a thing that's happening. And then he's meeting with Voiello, and Voiello actually has an outburst on him, saying that his election was meant to be a compromise as a vote of moderation, but between the two factions of the more progressive views of someone like Voiello and the more conservative views of someone like Spencer, and that really didn't work out. And then Pius goes on a whole rant about learning from the history of the church. How great was the power when the fear of papal states was in the DNA, and now the church has become small and decline in influence. I point this out merely because this is something we're going to be covering in our show in big detail. We're seeing the rise of power, the decline of power, the rise of power, the decline of power. He's only pointing out one small circle of the scope of the history of the papacy, and it made me laugh.
So I see why I'm so confused by what Mary is about when Jesus is taken off the cross. And it's usually his mom, but Mary Magdalene is sometimes in the painting. She's not holding him, but...
Yeah.
She's sometimes just around being sad.
She's usually part of what's called the Lamentation of the Dead Christ, where there's usually it's Mary, and there's a couple other people who are generally there. There's one sculpture that's been done of it by Niccolo dell'Arca, which is some of the absolute best representation of, like, human grief in sculpture. And so it's really, really beautiful. But it has all of the people in it that are supposed to be there.
It's Mary and her entourage.
It's usually Mary of Cleophas, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the Greater, and John the Evangelist. And it is the craziest sculpture, so. But yeah, those are the people who are usually there. So, yeah, it's usually Mary who's holding him, though. That's why we have the Pietà, like the famous Pietà. Actually, I can't remember what episode it's in, but they are spending quite a lot of time looking at the Pietà because they've had the Vatican museums closed so that Pius can look at it. So then we see Pius finally actually identify his lack of vocation. He's talking to Gutierrez and about his young life, and then we find out from Voiello that Gutierrez is an alcoholic and he's trying to blackmail him.
Well, look, come on.
I mean...
As a millennial, that didn't seem like an excessive amount of alcohol.
Well, okay, as a teetotaler, it sure did.
Yeah, no, I'm just like, okay, so he's got, you know, he's got his bottle of gin, and then he's got like six other types of alcohol, and they're all under his bed in a neat row.
Differing perspectives, for sure.
Voiello is like, look at all this booze I found, and like, don't come to my house.
I looked at it and I went, whoa, dude, you got a problem. But hey, I don't have any booze in my house, so there you go.
It's true.
So moving to episode 4, it starts with Tonino Pettola, who is a man who's claiming the stigmata.
There's a bunch of people in the field waiting for him.
Yeah. He's gaining his reputation as a stigmatic. He claims that the sheep is the Virgin Mary. And he's also, I don't know if it's right here at the beginning, that he claims that he's descended from both the Virgin Mary and Padre Pio.
It might, and I think that was more at the end there when he was talking to that lady.
The interview, yeah, okay. But either way, as you see him, he's having this moment of religious exaltation, and then he hugs the sheep and he smiles in a way that definitely says, I'm a charlatan. So that was the thing that was happening. And then we go back to Pius, who is basically having a moment with a nun whose sister is dying in Sri Lanka.
I could not figure out why it was so fucky, the audio, for like a hot minute. I was like, why does he sound like he's on an airplane?
Because she has a hearing aid.
And then he says something like, all of us don't believe or like have a crisis of faith. Like he says something very blunt that's basically like he's having a crisis of faith. And she doesn't quite hear it because of the hearing aid.
Well, because she says that she doesn't want to necessarily go home to Sri Lanka to see her. She wants to be there for the funeral, but every time she goes back to Sri Lanka and she deals with the suffering there, she starts to doubt that God exists. And he says, oh, we all doubt that God exists or something like that.
Yeah.
And then when she says, what did you say, Holy Father? He changes it, of course. And it's just an odd scene, but he's clearly, he has an interesting relationship with this nun as the episode progresses, because he kind of has identified, ooh, look, this is someone who might have crises of faith like I do.
Mm-hmm.
But then it skips to Esther, who's this, you know, flawed but supremely pious sinner who's being coerced into trying to seduce the Pope.
And Foyello is like, seduce the Pope. And she's like, what? What?
Yeah, because she had an extramarital affair with the one guy beforehand. And he's like, I will tell the Pope and he will be disappointed in you. So you better try to sleep with him so that we can catch him in scandal. And then it goes to Pius baptizing children. And
oh, he looks so fucking annoyed.
He's so annoyed. He's like, oh, he takes after you. Does the baptism, he takes after you.
He says it to one lady, and he's like, I know this child is adopted, but you know, in his heart.
Yeah, it's an amusing scene for sure, because it's the first time that I was like, same, Pius, same. Because I'm not a children person, so I could see why that would be tedious, to say the least, but it was quite funny. And then he goes on about someone at some point, I haven't made a note here of who said it, but they talk about the silence of homosexuality in the church, because now it's going to come up in every damn episode.
So this prime minister, this lady from Greenland is there, and she's got her like assistant with her, and her assistant is this charismatic, charming gay man.
That's right.
And a bunch of the priests are like, all his jokes are funny, and they're like talking to him and saying like paying attention to him. And it's implied that every single one of those priests is gay, and not that this man is just charismatic and overly funny and interesting, like...
Yeah, but this is the thing we're going to see with Pius, is he blames every single thing that might be wrong or a little bit out of line in the church on homosexuality, and this is where he takes his stance on it, and so this is just the first sign that we see of that. And it's also tied directly into how he speaks to the Prime Minister of Greenland, who is a woman. He's incredibly obstinate with her, and it definitely comes across as, like, condescending sexism. Obviously, Greenland does not have a heavy population of Catholics. There was at one point, but Greenland is definitely a Protestant Lutheran, I believe, country. And so he's...
He compared it to the plight of the Native Americans.
Yeah, ooh. And that was, ooh, very cringy, because you can't do that. But yeah, everything he says to her is just generally incendiary. So yeah, anything he says to her is just generally meant to be obnoxious. He's like, you need to do more for your Catholic families in Greenland, because under all that ice could be God. And it's...
What's under the ice? Well, maybe some islands, man. No, what about God?
Yeah, a little strange. And then we come back to the nun whose sister has now died. And the scene starts in a way where, you know, he brings the nun's sister from Sri Lanka to be buried at the Vatican, which is a very kind and thoughtful thing to do. And you're like, oh, he has a heart.
Yeah.
And then he goes to the, where the nun is holding vigil over her sister and is clearly distraught, and then gives her absolute shit for crying and feeling grief because, oh, she's gone to God and that's a better place. We need to stop crying at funerals because, like, this is ridiculous. It's showing your doubt in God. And it's like, oh my God.
You know what? It's just,
you're the worst.
Yeah. Like, he sometimes is like, ooh, I need to be really good. And then sometimes he just has, like, his cold black heart gets the better of him and he's so rude.
And it's just like, why are you taking, like, it's like, because she's upset, it's somehow a personal affront to him. I don't know. It's a very weird scene because obviously he's doubling down on this whole, if God exists, then we should be joyous when people leave. So he's taking it very personally in his own crisis of faith, but oh, so obnoxious.
Was this the episode where he sits down and goes and says that he had like a week-long girlfriend? Or was that the episode prior?
It might have been the episode prior where he talks about it because he, at some point he's sitting down, it might have been right here where he's having the conversation with Esther. And he says, oh, you remind me of her, and then they talk about it.
He tells the other, his soft boy about them.
Yeah, he talks about it. Yeah, it was in the last episode when he's talking to Gutierrez about his crisis of faith.
His week-long girlfriend, and I just expected mm-hmm. him to break into the tell me more song.
Well, and then he's talking, this is where he's talking to Esther, and he's like, oh, you remind me of her.
Except prettier, and I'm like, Esther is not that pretty.
But the gift of her beauty, and I know who I want to share my gift of my beauty with, and blah, blah, blah. She's as obnoxious to me as he is, although as the show progresses, you can see, because things will happen for her. What we learn about Esther, roughly at this point, is that all she wants in the entire world is to have a child.
It's a baby.
She wants a baby so bad.
She's sterile because she's so beautiful or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and she needs to, like, yeah, it's, the whole thing is very contrite, but as her character progresses, she gets a little bit, her relationship with Pius changes, and so we'll get there. But the next thing that we see is Voiello sitting with the Pope, and he is, it comes back to the Curbelo case again. He wants to see all cases of sex abuse prosecuted and wants to see it dealt with. Like, let's get on this Kurtwell case. Let's do something about this. And Pius makes it all about homosexuality. He conflates sex abuse with homosexuality, which is a thing that I have a huge, huge, huge problem with. And Voiello defends them as two very different things, but Pius thinks they're on the same level and implies that two-thirds of the clergy are gay and shouldn't be there, and that they must be the ones who are the problem. And it's just, that scene is so infuriating to me.
No, it's, they've all been really infuriating at this point. Whenever mm-hmm. he's talking about, he's just got it. He's so bad about gay people.
We are 100% not in support of Pius's view of homosexuality. And there will be consequences that he has to face for his viewpoints later, but not
yet.
Not in a way that affects him as much as it should.
How dare.
Yeah. And then he has, you know, as he's speaking to Voiello, you know, he goes again back to this idea of the calling, the vocation. And even Voiello's like, I didn't have a holy illumination. I just thought it would be good to be a priest. So, you know.
Something to do.
Yeah, and then this is where we go to the interview with Stigmata Man.
Yes.
And he claims that he can heal the sick, that he's a descendant of Padre Pio and of Mary, and that the church refuses to recognize his gift as legitimate, and he's talking about wanting to start his own church. So this is the first sort of threat of schism that we have, but it definitely won't be the last. Nothing really happens with him at that point. And then it shifts back to Voiello
breaking into people's houses.
No, I don't think he was with his disabled nephew.
Oh yeah, no, I forgot. Yes, he was.
And I will say, at this point, I think that relationship that he has is very sweet, but the way that he speaks about it really bothers me because I can go on quite a long long digression on the discussion of, like, relegating disabled people to not having agency.
Yeah.
And he talks about how he refers to his nephew as his best friend, and he says, like, this is the only person who's living a sinless life. And however you feel about sin, to just completely cut someone off from something that is, in the Catholic view, very fundamental to being human, that implies that they're not fully human in this way. And it just, I am not going to get on my horse about it, but needless to say, this is a view that I think is somewhat religiously problematic in the church is how they construct their understanding of disabled people. So I think that Voiello's giving it his best shot, but it's still not quite there. And then the Pope sees Esther having sex.
For whatever reason, Esther's husband wants to bang directly against the window. And the Pope is running around in his papal jogging suit where you can see his entire dick.
Oh, yeah. It's not subtle. You can see all of everything.
He might as well not be wearing papal jogging pants at that point. That's how much of his dick you can see.
Yeah, definitely. And he stops to see them having sex and decides he's going to pray for them to have a baby.
Directly next to their home, he just starts shouting at the sky.
And she clearly sees him, and he starts giving Mary orders. He's like, you must. And it's clearly like how his intensity and his cadence continues to increase in intensity. It's like he's the one who's having sex. It is just strange. And that's how episode 4 ends. And so,
and like, he gives her a saucy wink.
Oh god, I hate the winks.
They're bad. He's a bad winker.
Yeah, it's everything that I hate about his character rolled into one when he winks at people. So yeah, we're 40% through our ranting about this show. I hope that you're enjoying listening to us do it, because
fuck this show.
It's a trip. Oh, just wait, because there's more to come. I've already gotten back up to episode 7, so I have so many more things to say. But yeah, it's going places, and I can't wait to hear what you think of it. On that note, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Bye.